We're speaking now with Mark Sauter. He is our state representative in the Idaho Legislature for District 1. Mark, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us.
Thanks, Chris. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure. It's very humbling to serve your district, and it's been an interesting experience in the last few months. So thanks for having me.
I bet it has been. You know, you were elected just last November, and this was your first year as a state representative in the Idaho Legislature. What are your overall impressions of how the year went and the things that you had to pick up as a freshman legislator?
In brief, really, I'd say it was very interesting, and I know that's a pretty broad, you know, comment, but there's a lot to learn. We came in the first part of December for a couple of days for orientation and were sworn in, and then came back in early January. The session starts kind of slow. You know, you're trying as a new person, a freshman, as they call us around here, you try and get a feel for kind of the cadence of how things work. Almost every day you go, you have a session that's on the floor of the House, and then there's quite a few committee meetings. Sometimes it's two a day, sometimes it's four a day for meetings. So you're pretty busy that way. But overall, things just keep getting faster and faster. So you get a few emails the first day, and then I checked my emails today. I have 6,000 emails that I've received in the last 3 months, essentially. So that's a pretty good number.
Yes, it is.
To look at. And so I honestly don't answer all of them, because a lot of them just essentially tell you how you should vote. Or what you should be thinking about. I've answered a few, and then you get a lot of phone calls too. But there's a lot of really good people that you get to meet, sometimes with widely varying opinions. But that, I would say, is one of the highlights, is the number of people that you meet that are here really for the same reason, to serve their communities and to help our state.
Well, what we want to do today is go through a bunch of the bills that the Idaho legislature considered this year. A lot of them passed, some of them didn't, but were voted on. Mm-hmm. And I want to find out how you voted on some of them and why you voted the way you did. So let's jump in on probably one of the most significant bills to pass, and that was House Bill 292, which is a bill that it's intended to provide property relief, and it's also going to give a bunch of money to schools to reduce their debt on bonds and levies. And this was a bill that was talked about for a good part of the session. Governor Little actually vetoed the bill, but then the legislature overrode the veto and approved a trailer bill that would address the governor's concern. How did you vote on that one? And can you give us any insights on why you voted as you did?
Sure. I voted yes on it. And the short of it is, it's hard to vote against a property tax relief bill. We only get one shot at that. It's not like we had, you know, initially there was three essentially property tax relief bills. There was House Bill 77, 78, and 79, and they were all different. For the most part, 77 and 79 morphed into 292. So it was really kind of the grand deal. The Senate and the House both negotiate that. They try and come up with something that they will not alter, that one body will try, won't, essentially they commit that they will not amend it when it comes down to a vote. So yes, it does give money. It converts some state sales tax to property tax relief. It also takes money from the Wayfair tax, which is a online tax the state gets, and adds that to a tax relief fund. Also takes the budget surplus that's about $75 million to $150 million a year. That money is then applied to property tax relief. And then this year it applied about $100 million to the school districts. And that was based on, that gets doled out on average daily attendance. So obviously the district should have a lot of students get more of it, but it still is a nice chunk of funding for our three local school districts. So anyway, I voted for it. The downside of it, I'll tell you right away, is that part of that is the eliminating the March levy for the school bonds, or the March election for school bonds. That was already a big issue in the House. They'd already voted a separate bill for that. So but that's kind of the ins and outs of it. I have a page that I requested and received. For year one, for instance, the expected savings for property owners with a $450,000 home for Lake Pend'Oreille School District is about 300, just $320 a year. For West Bonner, it's about 333, and for Boundary, it's about 339. And I'm told that if it's a $900,000 value, so double that, the numbers would almost double. So it's a reasonable amount of tax savings. And then full disclosure, I had hoped that we would have something in the tax bill about averaging, so we don't have the spikes for some of our property taxpayers. We didn't get that this time. I'll come back and work on that again. And then something about the homeowners exemption, and we didn't get very far on that either. But nonetheless, this is an improvement for our property taxpayers, and it gives money directly to schools. You probably know at least a third of our property tax goes to different levies, and often and bonds for schools. So paying down those, and that's what the money that goes to the districts is for. So paying down bonds and levies ultimately pays down property tax. So that's why the two are put together. So,
And
okay.
I'll throw one other little shout out there. You mentioned that the
Sure.
bill, it kind of a rider in it was that it's going to eliminate March dates for school bond or levy elections. And I know that a lot of school districts were concerned about that because March is a
Yeah.
month when, the schools are in session, and for a couple reasons. They have more success in passing levies in a March election. And I think that was one of Governor Little's objections. I'm not sure about that, to the bill when he vetoed it the first time. So.
And you're right, and that's a sad. That's you know that that's part of almost all bills. You never you know it's rare that you really like a bill 100%. So in this case, we had to make a you know we had to make a judgment, and I voted yes to it as most people did vote for the tax relief. So I stuck up for our schools in a lot of other ways, but in this case, I came down and voted on the property owner side of it.
Okay, well, here's another bill I want to take just a minute to talk about because it did get a
Sure.
lot of play, and that's House Bill 124, which eliminated the ability to use student ID card to vote. So students will have
Yes.
to use a different form of identification when they go to the voting booth. That one was signed by law into law by Governor Little. How and why did you vote on that one?
I voted yes on it, and I voted no on almost all the other balloting issues. But I voted yes. We, according to Clerk Mike Rosedale, we had three students use their ID in Bonner County in the 2020 election. And that was the one complaint that he had about our election, essentially our system, was that student IDs are a pain. They're hard to verify. They're not uniform. And the other part of it is that some people may not know is there was a parallel bill running. It was 126 that didn't make it, but Bill 340 did make it. And that was that the Secretary of State was pushing a statewide ID system for everybody, for students and for seniors and for lots of other people that don't necessarily have a driver's license. So
Yeah, that
that
House Bill 340, and that is to issue this ID at no cost.
right. So that kind of took the place of it, and I like the uniformity of it. So even though I don't like in any way restricting anyone's, options to vote. I thought in this case it did make some sense. So I actually voted yes to stop the use of student IDs, and I voted yes on 340, which was to make the universal IDs available throughout the state. And that's a Idaho Department of Transportation, I believe, that does that.
Okay, well, I was going to ask you about that one, so you got to that first. But here's another one that had to do with voting, and that's House Bill 205. And it was a bill that would have made it more difficult for voters to qualify for absentee voting. To receive a mail-in ballot, voters would have had to have been in the military or had a disability or an illness. They would have had to have a set of reasons to vote absentee rather than being able to freely vote absentee as they can right now. That vote failed in the House, so it didn't become law. But how did you fall out on that one?
I voted against that bill. I tried to stay in touch with both of our county clerks, and Glenda up in Boundary County, and then Mike in Bonner, both essentially said we have a bulletproof election process, and the absentee ballots were all personalized, and they were extremely confident. They used the term, or Mike used the term, bulletproof for that process. And Boundary County uses absentee ballots as their early balloting. They don't actually set up a voting booth like Bonner County does in the county building. So they use absentees right there, and you can fill them out and hand them back in. So they have great confidence in them. And I just thought it's a good way to vote. I know a lot of people in our counties use them. And there's also issues with us, like weather. So I thought it was important to make sure people had lots of options to vote, and so that's what I stayed with.
Was the argument in favor of this to restrict absentee voting, was it coming from a basis of security?
Yes, it was that, and there was even a bit of an argument that it's just people's right. They just need to show up and vote at the polls. And I just didn't, based on travel and distances. And another thing that came up is when I was talking to some of our constituents, they said, "Hey, you know what? We work, and showing up after work or trying to show up before work on a Tuesday, sometimes isn't all that easy." So I just thought it was a good, convenient way for our people to vote, and I didn't want to vote and to give that up.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another piece of legislation. This is one that narrowly went down, but had a lot of interest up here, and that is House Bill 314. And that would have allowed parents to sue libraries or schools if they disseminated, quote, harmful material to minors. Harmful materials is, it's, you know, doesn't have a bulletproof definition, but it could include nudity or sexual conduct or sexual excitement or abuse. And in this case, if the bill had passed, successful lawsuits could have claimed $2,500 in damages for each instance the material was obtained. So, for instance, if a librarian had let a minor check out a book that a parent objected to, and the parent could then sue the library for this sort of award of $2,500. Now that passed in the legislature, but it was vetoed by the governor, and then an attempt to override the veto in the House, it failed to by one vote to achieve a two-thirds that's required to override the governor's veto. So the bill failed. But how and why did you vote on that particular piece of legislation?
I voted against it, and full transparency, I've had a lot of people call me that were unhappy about that, and a similar number to say that they were happy about it. I thought the bill was written very broadly, too broadly, frankly. Takes a lot away from local control and our local boards. I'm told most libraries have a process that parents can, dispute the prop, you know, having a book in their library, especially in the children's section. There are, I know Boundary County does it. I think the Bonner County libraries do it as well. That's one thing I'm going to do when I come home is to go visit all the libraries and talk to them. But in short, I just thought the bill was written much too broadly. We have obscenity in our state code already. We have provisions to prosecute in our state provisions, in our state statute already. I specifically asked during one of these library bills, why is it that we need to have the private cause of action, which is this $2,500 fee? And back then, for that bill, it was $10,000. And I was told, well, the lawyers are a lot more apt to take one that has a, almost like a sure thing, than have to take on a case without that private cause of action attached to it. So I had some real concerns about it. There's a YouTube video out there actually by one of the bill drafters, and he claims that the lawsuits are really going to look more like $25,000 to $200,000, and that they believe the insurance companies will then have to pay them. And ultimately, that's probably just going to cascade down to all the bill payers, which is really us. So I just had an issue with it. The $2,500 is one thing, but by the time you add the fees and damages that are also in the bill, it looked like it would be a much greater expense. So I thought it needed to be enough. We needed another draft, certainly I thought to get rid of the private cause of action, but the bill drafters were not willing to do that. So we had the votes. So it was a tough vote, but in this case, I just feel like it needed some more work before I thought it would work for all of our libraries. So that's really the short of it, Chris.
Okay. And I know that some libraries I saw were expressing the possibility that they would just have to defend themselves a lot in court, and it would take a lot of resources if a lot of these sorts of actions were being brought against libraries. So that was one of their complaints about it.
Yeah. And you bring a good point. There's a faith issue here. And not necessarily religious faith, but faith in how things will go. We don't really know. Is there a chance for fraud in this? Can people bring things into libraries? I certainly hope that would never happen. But there's just a lot of uncertainties, and that's another reason it just felt like it needs a little more work. And no one wants pornography in our libraries. I'd like to think there isn't any, but you know, none of us that voted against this, you know, think that that's right, that that's completely off. But most of us, for the most part, we just said, you know what, we need a better bill. It needs to be better written, and it shouldn't hurt the libraries and be so ambiguous. So we'll keep working on it.
Okay. On to another bill. This is one that actually it didn't go that far. It failed in the House, but it was an interesting proposition. That was House Bill 339, and it would have placed an advisory question on the 2024 general election ballot asking voters whether they would support using public funds for private schools. And this kind of went to the whole question of providing so-called vouchers for people to use for private schools, and getting a sense of the electorate on that particular issue. Like I mentioned, it did fail in the House. How and why did you come down on that one?
I voted to put it on the ballot. And the language, wherever my notes, it's should the state direct or appropriate public tax dollars to private K-12 schools, including religious and for-profit schools? And I felt like it started with the Education Committee, and I was on Ed. I thought it was a reasonable question to ask the voters. However, a lot of the legislators were very uncomfortable with that. So it didn't, I think it died third, well, it died by a few votes, I think. But I voted for it. I thought it was a reasonable question to ask voters. And it didn't make it. So it's like, some, you know, a lot of bills, they sound good, but for some reason people take issues with it. to,
Oh, yes.
are at odds over things, and sometimes it's not even things that you can predict. So that's one of the surprising things here.
Well, that's actually a strength of having these debates in our legislative body, right? Is you get different points of view on these things, that's for sure. But it was an interesting question to see what the electorate actually thought about these ideas for basically what we would call vouchers for private schools. Anyways, that one failed, so that's not going anywhere. Here's one the governor did sign into law, and it's a House Bill 242. And this one got an awful lot of attention in Idaho as well as nationally. And it criminalizes transporting a pregnant minor who's seeking an abortion out of state or providing a pregnant minor with an abortion-inducing drug without parental knowledge. And it carries a pretty hefty penalty of 2 to 5 years in prison. The governor did sign this one, and it will be law now, though, of course, there's already some groups that are saying they're going to challenge this. But how and where did you fall on this one?
I voted yes for it. It was one of those bills where I looked at it and it seemed more like a law and order bill to me and a parental rights bill. So that's what I went with. I did not read into it some of the things that I've read in comments about our abortion standards and statutes and a lot of other things and medical advisory situations. I just read into it as more of a law and order one. You shouldn't transport, a minor. But it's open to interpretation. I thought of it as an older person, an older man or a man that's 18 or older that would take take his younger girlfriend across the way or something else. But there could certainly be some other illegal activities that are covered in it. So there's just a lot of issues with it. Like I said, I looked for kind of what I thought was the parental right and the law and order part of it. So that seemed reasonable to me. I guess time will tell if it turns out that it's overbearing or overreaching, and we'll have to see what happens. Since then, our attorney general has weighed in on it and said that he thinks there's an element of the medical community in it, but his opinion's already been questioned about the First Amendment rights of others to tell people or give them advice and information about what other healthcare options they may have across the state line. So I think that's been squelched. But anyway, you asked about the bill, and yes, I voted for it. I can see where there could be some problems with it, but in this case, I thought it was worth moving forward.
And it does not prohibit parents from taking their children, a pregnant
No,
minor, across the state border.
it doesn't. So it allows quite a bit of activity. But for some reason, some of our representatives felt that something like this needed to be run.
There's another bill that came up that concerned abortion. That's House Bill 374, and it creates exceptions for miscarriages to Idaho's law, which actually prohibits abortion in Idaho. It clarifies that medical treatment for miscarriages and ectopic pregnancies are allowable under the state's abortion ban, and the governor did sign this one into law as well. And how did you vote and why on that one?
I voted yes on this one, and it's not far enough. And I think most of the people that voted yes on it would say that. But it's at least a step in the right direction. I mean, you're in Sandpoint, you can hear people talk about Bonner General all the time. But before I came down here, I'd spent some time with some of our medical community in Sandpoint, so I knew we had some problems. Since we've been here, there's been dialogue about some different abortion regulation changes, and it just turned out that this was the best we could get some consensus on and get kind of through the get to the finish line before we finished up. There were other bills that offered more guidance and clarification for the medical community, and it wasn't up to me, but they didn't have the votes to get through the hearings and get out on the floor and get approved. This one did. I think we have a ways to go to work on our statutes and protect our medical community and give them some comfort, and as well as all of our women and our healthcare in general. But this was at least a small positive step forward. I sat in on a number of the meetings they had, the hearings that they had here, and spent some time talking with the medical community here at St. Luke's as well. So they embraced it and said that they thought it was an improvement over what we have. So I guess that's all.
And
No, I'll have to sit on that.
as you referenced, Bonner General Health announced just a few weeks ago that's discontinuing labor and delivery services. One reason being they can't get the staff, the pediatric physicians, in part because those physicians are concerned that they're open to being sued now over the type of care that they provide to pregnant women. This bill is aiming to help that situation, I think, but as you mentioned, what I've seen some of the medical community saying that this doesn't go far enough to allay those concerns by pediatricians.
Well, as far as the licensing goes, the specialists that we're really lacking, Idaho we have a low number of physicians per citizen in our state. Some of the lowest numbers across in the country. The bill does, and like you'd mentioned with the criminal defense, it does eliminate the affirmative defense for some of the different situations. So that's a help. And that was extreme, I think I'll use the term extremely alarming for some of our medical community. So that's been eliminated. The one thing the bill doesn't go far enough with is the health of the mother and clarifying that. As it is, it's if it's the mother's life's involved, but I think most or a number of people would like to see the health of the mother and the health of the mother's future childbearing and have that be a factor as well. And right now that's not in statute, but I'd certainly like to see that when we come back next year, see if we can address some of that too.
Okay, we're going to run out of time here shortly, but I want to squeeze in two more. A Senate Joint Resolution 101 would have amended the Idaho Constitution to make it more difficult for citizens to put initiatives on the ballot. Had the resolution been approved, it was adopted by the Senate, but it failed in the House. Had that been approved, it would have gone on the ballot for a constitutional amendment, I believe. And it was adopted by the Senate, but it failed in the House. How did you vote on that one?
I voted against it. It changes the way the initiative process works in our state. We're one of the more difficult states, according to one of our handouts that we had the morning that we voted. Idaho's number five in the country as far as difficulty, and that would have moved us to number one as far as difficulty in the country to get an initiative on the ballot. It changes, like you said, goes from six instead of 6% of the voters across the state, and you have to get voters from 18 of the 35 districts. It changes to 35 out of 35. So that means that any of the districts, if they failed to of the voting districts of Boundary and Bonner, if an initiative could not get 6% of the voters, not the past voters from the last election, but the registered voters. So that's a pretty high bar. And it also makes every county, every district in the state, 35 of them, every one of them has a veto option. So they could stop an initiative. I looked at it, it was going to make our process much more difficult. I had a lot of messages from our district saying that to vote against it, which I did. But it also really reduces the freedom of our citizens to put something on the ballot. It's not easy to do. If you talk to anyone that's been involved in any of the initiatives, whether you like the initiative or not, it's a heck of a lot of work. to put one on the ballot and to make it that much more difficult, I thought was not just, I just didn't think that was right. So I didn't think it needed to go to the voters.
Okay, one more.
Yes,
House Bill 186, it allows Idaho to use a firing squad as a form of execution. Sounds pretty harsh, but the governor signed that bill into law. How did you vote on that one?
I voted against it. More than anything, just on a, well, couple of reasons. One, the estimated cost is $750,000 to $850,000 to set up a some kind of a firing squad spot in our state. I thought that was excessive. It was just j December that the chemicals for a essentially a for capital punishment were not available when our state wanted them. So here it is, it's April now. I'm not sure if we're actively trying to get those chemicals or drugs now, but it's only been a couple of months since that happened. I'd like to see us do a little bit more work to find those drugs. It was mentioned on the floor that some states use fentanyl, and that drug's pretty, readily available. So I just thought the whole thing needed some better public policy, and I didn't think it was a very conservative option to spend $750,000 or $850,000 for a backup procedure. And I asked questions during the hearing of the state parole people or penitentiary people and asked if they supported it, and I got a pretty milquetoast answer of, well, we'll do what we're told. So I just wasn't comfortable with that we had really thought all of this through. And especially the fact that I didn't really feel like we looked through all the drugs and what those options were. So for that reason, I just thought it wasn't worth it. Just it didn't pencil to me. But obviously others did vote for it, and it's on the books now as a secondary option for us.
Mark Sauder, we have flown through our time.
Yeah.
Real quick though, take 1 minute. Is there anything else that you would like to bring up personally that transpired down there?
I think we accomplished some things. We all know the chatter. But I came down here interested in being an advocate for jobs and education, and we ran bills and were successful at getting the new, career technical education program started across the state. We're going to help out all of our graduating high school students that with some real a real good kickstart into the working community to fill jobs that are needed, that our industry is asking us to help fill. So, and remember, those industry people also pay taxes, not just our property taxpayers and homeowners. So I thought we made took some good strides there. I think I tried to watch our budgets the best I could. I maintained my commitment to pro-life. We did push, get some more clarification for some of our abortion statutes, and I really want to support our medical community, so I'm trying to make that balance work. And we passed a number of things for law enforcement, and we passed a EMS bill that will help study statewide EMS, and that should help our rural EMS responders in both of our counties. So felt like we had some positive outcomes, and more to, the way I look at it, more to come. I have a long list of things I want to get done in the next several months and be ready for the next session. So it's a good
And
time.
we will want to swing back and talk to you again before you get down there
Yeah, that'd
next
be
year for
great.
sure. Yeah.
That'd
Mark
be great.
Sauder, our state representative, Idaho Legislature, District 1. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with us. We'll see you when you get back up here.
All right. Thanks, Chris.